It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Wisconsin Congressman Mark Pocan, a Democrat, and Derek Van Orden, a Republican, haven't gotten along since Van Orden won election in 2021.
Their dispute escalated to more personal attacks on social media. Van Orden has mocked Pocan's physical appearance and called him a vile creature. Pocan has accused Van Orden of alcoholism and white supremacy.
The dispute led to a tense in-person confrontation between the two congressmen that was caught on camera by Spectrum TV.
Hey, Derek. Classy as always, man. We love it. Thank you.
Have you lost your mind?
Yeah, right.
You know, people read this stuff.
I saw your drunken tweet at 1:30 in the morning last night.
No, I got done with the NDA.
Oh, I got it.
Van Orden has reported credible death threats against him this summer. Pocan's name was on the hit list for the attacker who killed one Minnesota state representative and critically injured another.
We're checking in on the rising tensions in Wisconsin's congressional delegation in the wake of that political violence in Minnesota.
Reed Ribbles, a former Republican U.S. representative from Sherwood who represented Wisconsin's 8th House District. Reed, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Hey, I'm happy to be with you. Thank you.
As a former member of Wisconsin's congressional delegation, what goes through your mind as you see this going on between two members of the delegation now, Representatives Pocan and Van Orden, in person and online?
Well, for me, what goes through my mind is how it impacts Wisconsin. You know, there's a lot of things that come before the House delegation, Republicans and Democrats alike, that you have to kind of lock arms when you're in a small delegation like Wisconsin is. And so you don't want to have, but you want to have really good comedy between the members, and because sometimes you need each other to do the right things for Wisconsin when you're voting.
Now, I don't think we're pointing at a golden age here where you were all giving each other, you know, hugs and birthday presents all the time, but what kind of working relationship did you see among the delegation when you were in it?
Well, there were several times that you would either have infrastructure issues that you were dealing with. Maybe it was a bridge over the Mississippi River. It might be a water-related issue in Lake Michigan. It's those types of things where Republicans and Democrats in a small delegation like Wisconsin is competing for money with a large delegation, let's say, like from Texas. And so you have to be able to pull all those votes and voices together to get your Democratic, I was a Republican, to get Democrat colleagues to apply some pressure to other Democrats to vote with us when we needed to have something. And it often centered around either water issues or transportation issues.
On those issues that you weren't on the same page, which happened, of course, how did you try to, you know, disagree politically and maybe even strenuously without that sort of personal element of it where you're attacking that person as a person?
Yeah, I mean, I tried to be very careful about that. In part, it's a little bit of my temperament. But I reached out to the members of the Democratic delegation. And I wanted to make sure that we were always on a reasonably friendly level with each other. Ron Kind and I became pretty good friends, and Mark Pocan and I became pretty good friends. Gwen Moore and I served on the budget committee together, and we were often voting on the opposite sides of the issue. But we had a really good working relationship where we could talk together, and we weren't picking an undue fight with each other that would break down that relationship.
This whatever between Representatives Pocan and Van Orden seems like a particularly big example of personal attacks going on here. I think there's a perception in the public that, in general, things are a little worse across the aisle these days. What do you think? Do you think that's true? It's not just this one case.
I don't know that I've witnessed one as personal as this. I mean, you're not seeing that from other people on X or on other forms of social media where you've got people in a delegation going after each other in such a personal manner. And, you know, my advice is if you're being attacked by somebody, they're often trying to yank your chain to get a reaction. And the best way to dissuade somebody from doing that is to let go of the chain on your end. Because if you're holding on to it, then you feel it when it gets yanked, and you're just better off tuning it out and not responding to it. But it seems like both of these men, who I have good relationships with both of them, have been unable to do that. They take it personally, and then they feel like they've got to respond back, and I think that that's a mistake.
some of their constituents are listening in both of their districts right now. What would you want to see from members of the voting public to try to hold their elected officials accountable? Not necessarily waiting to election day, of course, but just to demand something better.
Well, you know, we're living in an era of what I would call political outrage. And it's so easy to stand behind a computer screen and type away, and the American people are mad. And so there's a certain element both on the left and right where fighting has become the kind of the ultimate principle. And every candidate talks about, I'm going to fight for you, and I'm going to hold the line, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that. And it's all this fighting language, which I think diminishes the comity that's required to have a good governing body, whether it's at a state legislature or in the U.S. Congress. And so I think voters themselves have to take a minute and look in the mirror and say, am I contributing to this? And I don't want to contribute to this. And so I'm going to reinforce with my elected officials not to engage.
We are talking about an escalating dispute between Wisconsin Congressman Mark Pocan and Derek Van Orden and wider issues of civility and incivility in politics. Reed Ribble is with us, former Republican congressman from Wisconsin. Worries about political violence. We had assassination attempts on Donald Trump at the campaign trail, the assassination attacks on Minnesota lawmakers, a tragedy there. Derek Van Norden has reported multiple instances of credible death threats. Mark Pocan on the hit list for the Minnesota assassin. Do you have worries about this being a scary time for politicians, for elected officials?
Well, sure. Of course I do. And I think every American should have concerns about that, because there just isn't a place for political violence. But if we would put this in its historical perspective, political assassinations in the 1960s were much more frequent than they are today. And so although the rhetoric has gotten hotter and the ability to hide behind a computer screen has gotten broader, the actual political violence is actually been reduced over time. And so we have to make sure that we keep our heads about it and call it out when you see it, demand something better from ourselves and from our fellow citizens and our elected leaders, and then continue to move forward. But the fastest way to get beyond this is for Congress to actually do its job and legislate, and then the president to either sign or veto legislation that they send over. And we need a functioning government once again, rather than one that just wants to rattle cages.
You brought up the issue of the stakes of the presidency in particular, and with Congress, as you point out, often stalling on big issues like immigration, more turning toward executive action, especially now, I think, in the second Trump administration. The stakes for a lot of people feel really high, and I think a willingness to bend the rules, right, to turn away from institutions and norms and things like that. Do you worry that this perception of high stakes is taking us away from some of the things that prevented escalation, whether violent or rhetoric or otherwise?
Yeah, I'm 100% concerned about it, and I've spoken out quite a bit about it. I believe that the Congress needs to more jealously protect its authority under Article 1. The House of Representatives and the U.S. Senate ought to be almost adversarial with the White House, not working so closely in collaboration. But partisanship has kind of taken over, almost acting as if it were a principle, rather than us following the strict guidelines of our founders, where they gave all legislative powers to the Congress of the United States. And for example, any of these trade agreements that President Trump is negotiating, where he's basically imposing tariffs on foreign trading partners without the consent of Congress, that's in essence, he's writing out a whole cloth, an entire new form of a consumption tax without any single vote in Congress. And these are the things that get citizens riled up, because that impacts their pocketbook and they're concerned about it. And ultimately, they're going to get their say when the next election comes up.
Reed, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hey, it's great to be with you. Thank you.
That's Reed Ribble, former Republican U.S. representative from Sherwood, who represented Wisconsin's 8th House District, with us today to share his perspective on the relationships between Wisconsin's congressional lawmakers as Mark Pocan and Derek Van Orden escalate their ongoing feud, plus wider issues of civility in politics. Now we're turning our attention toward efforts to tone down political rhetoric after the murders targeting Minnesota state representatives earlier this summer. Shannon Watson is executive director of Majority in the Middle, a Minnesota nonprofit that promotes transparency, participation, and civility within political and civic life. Shannon, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for the invitation, Rob.
After this tragedy, after the political violence in Minnesota, as somebody who's been advocating on these issues, what went through your mind as to how to come back from this?
You know, this was the opportunity that I really wish I never had, frankly. I can talk about political division. I can talk about structural partisanship. I can talk about, you know, civility and how we do better. But I will say that Saturday morning when I started getting phone calls, I didn't know how to talk about political violence. Luckily, within my network is a guy whose name is Nathan Stock. And I say Nathan has a very unfortunate job. He is an expert on political violence. He's worked on it for years. And so I got together with him and we put together this initiative to give space and attention to doing all the things that Congressman Ribble was talking about, turning down the temperature and changing our language, and really elevating that this is kind of our worst case scenario. And we really want to set up a culture shift so this never happens again.
You've been working, among other things, with lawmakers from both parties in Minnesota. Were they receptive to the idea that, hey, we need to turn down this rhetoric?
Yes. Not necessarily universally, and not necessarily immediately, which is just an illustration of how far this kind of knocked some people off their socks. Fear has a tendency to make humans turn inward, and there's some physiology about how if you are fearful, your brain actually blocks some of the feel-good chemicals that allow us to bond with other people. And so as, you know, I mean, the suspect wasn't caught for, I think it was 46 hours, which I will say, I mean, law enforcement did an outstanding job, you know, getting a hold of him. But people were very fearful for a long time, and they still are, where I'm still dealing with legislators who don't want to do public events, who you know, are looking at this in an entirely different way, who are taking threats even more seriously. But I think there has been an acknowledgement over the last couple of years that like the congressman mentioned, you know, the political outrage and how we're just always in that cycle. You know, it feels like there's almost nowhere to go when the political outrage meter is constantly turned up to 11. And then when something like this happened, it was like, well, where do we, like, we've already exceeded the scale of outrage. What do we do with this? So I think there is an appetite for it. And the question is just how do we do that? How do we govern either ourselves or members of our similar parties and affiliations? And then how much is the responsibility of the people who are sitting across the aisle from us?
It seems like there's an incentive structure to be more outrageous for some politicians. If I run for office and I'm civil and nice, you know, maybe I win, maybe I lose, whatever, but I'm kind of anonymous. If I make waves and antagonize the other side and get a big response, well, all of a sudden, sympathetic people around the country are maybe sending me campaign donations and raising my profile. How do we turn around that incentive structure to say you benefit from not being outrageous?
Absolutely. And I think that will come when the voters and legislators' constituents, and that could be on the state level, that could be on the congressional level, when they start holding people to account and reminding legislators that, you know, as I was listening to Congressman Ribbletop, he was talking about, you know, what success looked like to him in how to get legislation passed and why those relationships were important in doing the job. But I think in some of these scenarios, success looks different, and it looks like the attention that fuels the attention economy. And I think as much as we say we want people to be serious. We want, you know, we want to talk about policy. Human beings just don't, we just don't work that way, unfortunately. And so I think there's a role for all of us to play. There's a role for elected officials to say, yep, I could do the outrageous things, but I'm not going to. There's a role for constituents and voters to say that we're going to reward people who are being serious. And then there's also a role for media to play in covering the stories, not necessarily just of the people who are being outrageous, but covering the more sort of boring things, highlight the members who are working together to solve a problem, not just working to defeat each other.
In the partisan divide today, I think a lot of people are very supportive of compromise and civility for the other side, right? We're really ready to police those other guys. How do we get into a situation where we try to hold the people we agree with accountable?
I think there is a woman, and I'm spacing on her name at the moment, but she has a brilliant TED Talk, and it's about calling people in instead of calling people out. So when we talk about holding people accountable for their rhetoric and you know, taking them to task, what we are almost always talking about is somebody shouting somebody else down on social media or in public. But we have examples of how that's not effective. All it does is fuel those fires. And so when the conversations are not meant to intimidate or to embarrass or to shame, but they're really about one-to-one conversations, like, you know, I believe you can do better. Please do better. I think that makes a difference, because then that takes people from being part of the problem to being part of the solution.
One thing this all makes me think about is I've talked to a lot of political experts about the rise of what they call negative partisanship, meaning that, I'm more or less aligned with this one party, but I'm really opposed to that other side. And that motivating voting as much as, you know, agreeing with the person you're voting for. That seems bad, right? That seems like it's prone to make things worse and worse. Do you have thoughts on how we can get over that?
I think we need a better... We need a better dialogue around why people are running for office and what they really want to do. I think we need a little more civic education. One of the things that we do is try to let voters know what the difference is in jurisdictions. So your city councilor, your state representative, and your member of Congress, those are actually three different jobs with three different sort of areas of focus. And when voters, which in fairness, like a lot of it, for a lot of us, civic education stopped after, you know, 11th grade. So when you don't know the difference between what your city councilor is supposed to do and a member of Congress is supposed to do, then we have a tendency to conflate those two things. So when we talk about the scale and scope of what a city councilor is supposed to do, and if the candidates for that office can focus on those things, I think we're going to have a better shot at focusing on issues and not this like national political situation and culture that we've got.
Shannon, thanks so much for joining us today.
Absolutely, Ron.
Shannon Watson is executive director of the Minnesota nonprofit Majority in the Middle. Earlier, we heard from former Wisconsin Republican Congressman Reed Ribble for his perspective on political civility.